Pack your bags because we're going on a trip as Mr. Facts goes to Washington. Hear your host as he shares his adventures in D.C. to educate CMS on a proposed rule impacting digital cloud faxing technology. And now, here's your host, John Nebergall.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in today. I'm John Nebergall, Senior Vice President and General Manager of eFacts. On this series, we're discussing my travels to Washington, D.C. to meet with officials from CMS, as well as congressional stakeholders on a proposed rule that could impact cloud faxing technology, or DCFT. Be sure to follow this series and follow us on Twitter as well, at eFacts Corporate. This episode of the series is really going to talk a little bit about the alphabet soup of all of the rules being proposed from Congress to HHS to CMS, and understanding what the impact is on providers, especially as it relates to communication using digital cloud fax technology. So I think that the right place to start is actually thinking about the involvement of the government in promoting different kinds of behaviors by providers, and really starting back with the George W. Bush administration, the realization that as you advanced in being able to move towards electronic transactions, things became more secure, more cost effective, and really a better all around approach for being able to take advantage of advances in computer technology and apply them to healthcare administration. There was a study done quite some time ago that looked at all of the costs in healthcare and found that nearly $1 in every $3 spent in healthcare was for administration. So if you think about that, you see an opportunity for real streamlining of the overall way that you record, do the paperwork for, if you will, of healthcare. If you think of any business that was be spending a third of its money on just administration and clerical activities, you find that you have a real opportunity to think about efficiency and turn those efficiency gains into being better or more effective at what your core mission is, which is not the moving of paper, but is in the delivery of healthcare. So with that as the backdrop, there were a series of articles and a lot of focus spent on being able to encourage the provider community to adopt new kinds of tools to be able to deliver healthcare in an electronic environment that would ultimately reduce costs and improve the efficiency with which information went from place to place. Now, this was a hard argument to make. The reason it was a hard argument to make is because when you think about the benefits of improvement of efficiency in the delivery of healthcare, and you think about who those benefits accrue to, and let's talk about things like the reduction of costs. Remember, most costs are paid by insurance companies and by individuals, not by doctors. Improvements in administration. Most physicians, most doctors employ small staffs to be able to handle the paperwork, and they're also the ones that, you know, greet the patients and make sure the patients get to the right exam room or get to the right hospital bedroom. So when we see efficiency gains on the administration end of things, physicians still think, well, I still need to have somebody at the front desk anyway, so I don't really save any money in that process. Or I still need to have somebody room my patients or bed my patients. I don't really save money in that process. Physicians also saw that the burden of actually adopting the tools that would lead to this efficiency for everybody else was going to be their economic burden. In other words, you know, the physician or the lab company or the pharmacy company was the one that would have to go out and buy this system that would reduce costs that were already getting paid by an insurance company. So when you think about the burden of adopting electronic tools, most of that burden fell on the provider. And when you think about the benefits that accrue from adopting electronic medical records, most of those benefits fell to everybody else. Because of that, the administration at the time recognized that in order to be able to see adoption of these electronic tools, there would have to be some sort of cost offset, some kind of subsidy, something to help the provider community actually acquire these tools, whether it was an EMR system or an electronic communication system. And that's started us down a path of rulemaking that focused on driving certain behaviors in physicians in order to be able to get a greater reimbursement or get some kind of subsidy. And these started in the forms of the adoption of health information technology checks that were actually sent to physicians who would buy this stuff. In order to qualify for these, they had to prove that they used them. And you had a series of rules called meaningful use rules that were enacted, authorized, I should say, by Congress. And then the specific rules for how you as a provider could prove that not only have I bought an EMR system, which was very expensive, I am also using it in the way that was intended in order to gain the efficiencies and the improvements that were expected from an EHR system. And when I do those two things, I would get dollars from the government to subsidize my purchase and my use of this new technology. And because of the effectiveness of that, in fact, I think that the last numbers I saw is that somewhere near 85% of all physicians are using some kind of electronic medical records system. And if you go back 15 years, you saw that that was, you know, in the single digits, that the effectiveness of those incentives was not lost on the government agencies and the Congress. So they continued down the path of saying, oh, look, if we want to modify physician behavior and we want to be able to see the entire industry turn to a much more electronic industry, we can use these levers because we've proven that if you use those levers in certain ways, you actually get the behaviors you want. That brings us to a number of different kinds of rules that have been passed over the last 4 or 5 years, specifically around the concept of interoperability. Interoperability broadly is the ability for medical professionals to securely exchange patient information or other medical information in an environment that is, you know, highly secure, highly reliable, is able to be interpreted easily by some of these large electronic medical health record systems that have proliferated through healthcare. And by encouraging that kind of communication, the electronic communication, you wind up becoming much more secure in that you're eliminating paper, that you're putting together a very auditable way of communicating, that you're becoming very efficient in that, you know, it's electronic, so it's press a button to send something from point A to point B. And in all of that, enabling the better coordination of care, and by coordinating care better, ultimately the patient benefits. So this series of rules that really started around being able to encourage electronic transactions began with something called Meaningful Use 2. Remember, Meaningful Use was this idea of you buy an EMR system and you use it, and when you prove that, we'll subsidize it. Meaningful Use Phase 2 started to encourage different kinds of use of an EMR system, including the use of an EMR system to be able to exchange information electronically. That electronic information exchange. And I think if you listen to our last podcast, we talked about two specific protocols that they used. One was called Secure Direct Messaging or Direct, and the other is Health Language 7 or HL7. Both of those being acceptable ways to communicate information. And in that, specifically, fax communication was excluded as one of the acceptable means by which you could accumulate these meaningful use points or lead to incentive dollars for engaging in a meaningful use of an electronic exchange. The reason that fax was excluded is because we have a mindset of what fax is. It's a paper exchange system that needs a machine on each end, one machine to intake some sort of paper record, another machine on the other end to output a paper record. And of course, the whole point of trying to create this electronic environment within healthcare was to be able to eliminate the paper. The series of rules then that followed made the assumption that fax was out of the picture, and we were trying to promote specific kinds of electronic protocols in order to exchange information and create these incentives. So you have replacing the meaningful use for EMRs, then meaningful use phase two. Congress passed a bill in 2015 called MACRA, or the Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act. And CHIP is another acronym for the Children's Health Insurance Program. But this MACRA bill established somewhere along the lines of $6 billion of subsidies and incentives to be able to advance healthcare into the 21st century. A subset of MACRA was the merit-based incentive payment system, which would create a way for physicians to earn or accumulate incentive points by demonstrating certain behaviors. And as a subset of that, promoting interoperability was one of the behaviors that would gain you these points to earn your ability to share in some of the incentives created by MACRA. So physicians and especially large practices were very interested in pursuing these dollars. What they found through Meaningful Use 1 and Meaningful Use 2 is that when you change your behaviors, you get payments from the government in addition to your regular fees that you charge your patients for, you know, delivering service. So it's a nice addition to revenue if you're able to modify some of your behaviors, put them into your workflow, and be able to pursue these dollars that the government has been able to put aside for various programs. The latest twist on these programs has been the creation of a national plan and provider enumeration system, or NEPS, NPPES. It's an alphabet soup of government, and I get that. So I'm trying to be as clear as I can with all of these different acronyms and what they mean and where they come from. The NEPS, you can think of it as the yellow pages for providers to be able to find each other if they want to communicate electronically. As with anything, you know, whether you're sending an email to somebody or you're trying to send an FTP file to somebody, you need to know where they are, who they are, and what their address is. The same thing is true with providers. If I'm going to exchange patient information, I'm going to need an address and where to send it. The reason that CMS, through all of these programs, realized that one of the missing pieces to be able to promote this exchange of electronic documents, one of the missing pieces was a way for providers to easily find each other and use a reference to say, okay, if Dr. X needs to find Dr. Y, and one's in Kansas City and the other's in St. Louis, how do I look them up? Well, the idea was I'm going to look them up versus the NEPS system, and then I can find out what is their HL7 address, what is their direct address, how do I you know, how do I get my information from my system to their system, because that's where either the patient's going to be treated or I need a consult or it was, you know, some sort of order for a lab or other test. So this last piece, this NEPS phone book, if you will, specifically excluded fax again as being a recognized digital endpoint. And CMS was sort of taking it a little bit further. Not only did they want to populate the NEPS system, you know, the official, you know, phone book of the providers across the United States, they also wanted to, in 2020, start to publish the names of providers who weren't in it. So rather than simply having a provider be conspicuous by their absence in the NEPS system, the folks at CMS also wanted to make sure that patients could easily see if the provider they were seeing was in that phone book or not. In other words, you could, as a patient, learn that, you know, your physician may not have an electronic address and therefore would find it harder to communicate the information about your health with other providers who could be helpful to making sure that your care was delivered in a way that was coordinated, in a way that was collaborative, and in a way that would easily allow for your medical records to be exchanged with another provider. When we saw that, we really understood that through the course of all of these rules and now through the creation of this NEPS provider directory, that the specific exclusion of fax was a reasonably understood approach, because if you think of the concept of fax machines and paper and the elimination of that being a key component of what CMS wanted to accomplish, that made all the sense in the world. What we struggled with is our understanding, because we're in this industry, that fax is in fact a protocol that is a paperless technology that allows for the secure exchange of documents, that there was a piece that was missing in the way that CMS was thinking through the implications of not only the rules, but also the provider directory. And that's really the point that we recognized, that we needed to get involved directly and start a conversation with CMS that, number one, you know, demonstrated our belief that moving to electronic transactions was absolutely the right thing to do, full support of that. And number two, education around specifically the fax protocol, which could help CMS understand how this protocol not only was, you know, used in, you know, every workflow that physicians engage in on a daily basis. Literally, that's true. But also how that protocol helped them achieve the goals that they had set out for themselves and was in fact consistent with the focus on moving transactions from paper to an electronic medium. And from there, we were fortunate enough as J2 Global to have a very active, very strong government affairs organization inside our company that could facilitate meetings so that we could start the education process. And really, that was the genesis of what we were doing. We saw that a series of rules, really going back 15 years, had gone down the path of making an assumption around fax that was an assumption that we could help educate people on so that they could understand that fax was in fact a technology and not a machine. And also, when we got to the point where if a physician or a lab or a pharmacy was communicating via fax because economically that was the most economically viable way for them to have electronic communication, that they were in fact not even going to be in the phone book anymore for providers to find each other, which could, in our view, really significantly impact in a negative way the kind of delivery of care that I think CMS was trying to achieve. So our hope in starting the process was really to engage with CMS, let them understand that we're in support of the goals that they have, and in that also to educate them on how secure digital cloud fax technology supports those goals. So that is really the background of the set of rules that got us to the point where we wanted to get engaged, as well as the sort of background on fax as a protocol that applies to those rules in a positive way, but, you know, for various reasons, and most of it being the way people have generally thought of fax, needed some time for us to share what we know and educate the folks in Washington on this protocol so that there could be a better understanding of how it complies with the goals that they have in mind. Thank you for joining me today, and stay tuned for more of my travels to Washington as our series continues.
Be sure to tune in to all the Mr. Facts Goes to Washington episodes. Find more information on the program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Learn more about eFax at enterprise.efax.com, or follow them on Twitter and LinkedIn at eFax Corporate.